Don't you want the story twice? Have no fear, the studio say remake so.
So we should aim for next sometime.
Could do next Monday.
Okay. Cool. All right.
Next Monday.
Do we want to talk about this movie now?
Gosh, I guess we should.
Yes, we should.
Yeah, I'm. I will confess myself not super excited to talk about Pete's Dragon.
Yeah, it's not the best one. Hello and welcome to episode 10. Wow, of Once More with Feeling, a podcast about great original movies and their not so great remakes. Although in this case, you know, neither of them are that good.
I don't know. I think the new one's okay.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Okay, welcome to Once More with Feeling, a podcast about pretty bad original movies and their fine remakes.
Yeah, we're switching it up today.
Yeah.
But only for Patreon.
Yeah, the live recorded. Is this a Patreon episode? No.
Yeah. Is it not?
Yeah? I don't know. Oh, yeah. No. No, it isn't.
This is not
for everybody.
Okay. I know we were going back and forth on that.
Yeah. We'll cut this part out. The episode for everyone about great original movies and their not so great remakes. No, fuck, whatever. Mark. I'm Gus Schiff, comedian and screenwriter and short film director and guy who's applying to so many jobs right now.
And I'm Mariana, movie critic, communication scholar, YouTuber. I'm applying for no jobs right now. I've got enough jobs. They don't pay me, but I'm doing plenty.
Yeah.
Or vocations, let's say.
Yeah. Callings.
Yeah.
Today we're talking about Pete's Dragon, the 1977 Disney live-action animated hybrid. And also Pete's Dragon, the 2016 live-action CGI animated hybrid. Although we don't really call it that. I think
we do not. I think which is kind of interesting in itself, because like CG is just animation.
Yeah,
it's just that it's pretending to be real.
Yeah,
stupid.
Yeah,
what a bad idea! Going to ruin an entire generation of filmmaking.
I know everybody's fucked. Let me tell you a little bit about the original movie. Just a quick synopsis for I imagine the 98% of you who have not seen the original Pete's Dragon movie. It's about Pete, who's a little orphan boy. He escapes from his abusive hillbilly adoptive family, who enslaved him to work on a farm.
Yeah, they bought him.
Yeah, for $50 plus legal. That's a line from the movie.
Who brokered this exchange? I have to wonder. You know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. This is a dumb movie.
It's not great. And he, oh my God, I'm choking. Give me a second. I'm a professional. And he escapes with the help of his invisible and also sometimes two-dimensionally animated dragon, Elliot. Yay.
Who makes weird clicking noises with his mouth.
Oh my God.
In order to communicate. It was super weird.
They make it to the nearby main fishing town of Passamaquoddy, where Elliot destroys everything on accident. And then Nora, who's the kindly daughter of the drunk lighthouse keeper, takes in Pete, and Elliot moves into the cave underneath the lighthouse. Some stuff happens. Pete goes to school. A snake oil salesman named Doc Terminus comes to town and wants to butcher and sell Elliot for parts. And also Elliot finds and rescues Nora's long lost love from the sea. And by the end of the movie, Doc gets run out of town. Nora's long lost love comes back and Pete gets adopted. And then Elliot moves on to the next little boy who needs his help. Aww. So sweet. So this movie came out in 1977. Let me tell you a little bit about 1977. The Vietnam War has ended. Ended in 1975. This is the year that disco goes super mainstream with the movie Saturday Night Fever. AIDS was still 4 years away, so everyone was having sex and doing drugs. Jimmy Carter was just sworn in. beating Nixon's former vice president, Gerald Ford, although he would lose in, Jimmy Carter would lose in 1980 to Ronald Reagan. Boo. This is the year that Spain transitions to democracy. Both Voyager probes launch this year. The U.S. has, like, pretty handily won the space race. I think, like, my take on this point is, like, it's pretty clear as far as the Cold War goes that there's some, like, U.S. dominance internationally. Mm-hmm.
In 1977, specifically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, by this time. Like, obviously, okay, yeah. they lost Vietnam, and there was still, like, Rocky IV hadn't come out yet, so we hadn't dealt, like, the death blow to communism. But
it wasn't the wall. It was Rocky IV.
Yeah. But, like, the difference in results between, like, Soviet-style communism and this era of American capitalism were pretty, like, obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I think it was one of those things where it's like most people could kind of tell, maybe not most people. I think, like, there's a thing that happens in war when you, like, you look back at the beginning of the war, it was pretty obvious who was going to win. Mm-hmm. Like, the American South was never going to win the Civil War. The Nazis were never going to win World War II. Scary as those maps look.
Do you think MAGA's going to win, Gus?
Do I think MAGA's going to win?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I agree.
They don't make anything.
Yeah, I agree.
It's just their whole movement is counter, but they don't, like, other counter-revolutionaries, mm-hmm. like...
There's no positive vision.
Yeah. So, like, there's nothing to... They only fight against, you know? They don't fight for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, weirdly, you're seeing it right now with, like, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who I legitimately think, like, kind of realized that. It was like, wait a fucking second. Some of the things we're fighting against are good. Is good. Like, no pedophiles. Anyway. And I think this is kind of around the time where you can be like, okay, like, there's not really a lot that either country can do to change the eventual outcome.
Mm-hmm. The Soviet Union has been, like, limping along for quite a while. I'm not, like, a big, like, Soviet history nerd, but that is my impression.
Yeah, and then, like, and then they, not yet, but then they, like, go into Afghanistan in the next couple years, and that was a fucking disaster. Guys, if you're listening to this deep in the future, and you're, like, a big multinational empire... with a lot of influence in a bunch of different countries, do not invade Afghanistan.
No.
It does not turn out well.
No, they don't want you there.
they don't want you.
There's
their
nothing to
desire
have. Yeah.
to not be ruled is greater than your ability.
And it always will be.
Every single time. Don't do it.
Afghanistan does not want you there. Is the lesson of the 20th century, maybe.
Didn't work for the Soviets. Didn't work for the U.S. Didn't work for the Persians. Didn't work for the British. Didn't work for the Greeks. Don't do it. I guess Macedonians. Anyway, Spain transitions to democracy. I think I already said that. Smallpox is eradicated this year. And then there's a couple big cultural touchstones. Punk is pretty big right now. Sex Pistols come out with, I think, their only album. And, of course, Star Wars is released. Wow, Star Wars.
And also... Pete's Dragon.
Yeah. And also Pete's Dragon. The much more important of the two movies.
Yeah, real cultural touchstone, Pete's Dragon.
Yeah, super important. Mm-hmm. So this is, obviously, if you've been listening along to this season, which hopefully you have, been, obviously, this is the most live action, our original movie, of the original movies that we've looked at. But don't despair. Disney, the company, since Walt died in 1966, was still doing animation. I looked it up, and they have released 4 animated movies since The Jungle Book in, I think that was 1967. That includes, like, classic movies, like The Aristocats, Robin Hood, and The Rescuers, which I watched them all mm-hmm. when I was a kid.
Absolutely.
I didn't like The Aristocats because I didn't appreciate jazz at the time, but I think if I watched it again, I'd be happy. And then they also did a little, like, short film thing
Aristocats is also very much like, it's just, oh, sorry. Whoops. Stepped all over your sentence there.
Tell me about the Aristocats.
It's just Lady and the Tramp, but with cats. It's just cats instead.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh.
And it's just Lady and the Tramp with cats, except Lady is a single mother for some reason.
The butler throws everybody into the river. Yes. I remember that part.
Yes, yes, he does.
That really scared me.
Aww.
And we just haven't covered them because none of those have been remade yet. But Disney, around this time, producing a lot more live action than animation.
So much live action.
And I'm so much that I'm not even going to talk about them, except for the ones that were later remade, often for some reason with Lindsay Lohan, like The Parent Trap, the Herbie series, or The Parent Trap. Let me give you some dates. Parent Trap in 1961. The Herbie series, the first one was in 1969. And Freaky Friday, which is in 1976, and also Escape to Witch Mountain, which was not remade with Lindsay Lohan, but was remade with The Rock in 1975. This movie itself, Pete's Dragon, is based on an unpublished short story called Pete's Dragon and the USA Forever After by two writers named Seton I. Miller and S.S. Field. I don't know how Disney found it. There have been other things based on unpublished stories, like what were the movies that we watched? Dumbo was based on an unpublished short story with the like twisty wheel thing,
right? Lady and the Tramp also, right?
No, that was a published short story.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And I don't know how Disney found it, but he hired Miller to write it, but not a movie at the time. This was in like 1957 1958, but a two-part special for Walt's Disneyland TV show in 1958, although that obviously went nowhere. About 12 years later, Walt's dead. Whoever makes these decisions hires two new writers to redo Pete's Dragon. That goes nowhere. But then, like, another...
When did Walt die? So much time has transpired. Okay.
Walt died in 1966, mm-hmm. or possibly 1967. I'm not sure.
And when is the Jungle Book?
Walt dies during the production of Jungle Book.
Okay. So why are we doing Pete's Dragon?
Because Jungle Book is three movies, and I didn't have time to watch three movies. This is going to come out after Jungle Book. We're recording this out of order.
I see. So Jungle Book is episode 9.
Yeah. This is episode 10. Gotcha. That's why I said welcome to episode 10.
I know you did. I just lost track of how many episodes we've done. Yeah. Because we've just done so many.
We have done... this is our... never mind. I don't want to confuse anybody. He died in 1966, right at the end.
Okay.
So then Disney producer Jerome Cortland found the story somehow in the vaults or something, brought on a new writer, and then they hired Oscar-winning songwriters Al Kasha and Joel Hirshhorn to do the songs.
Fun fact, they were nominated. 20 billion songs. There's so many songs in this movie. Oh, my God.
They were nominated for the Candle on the Water song an Oscar.
Candle on the Water becomes like the only lasting cultural moment from this movie, right?
I had never heard any of these songs
before. Really? Yeah, I'd heard Candle on the Water for sure. I think it kind of got like adopted into sort of, I don't know about youth culture, but the culture of the day in some regard. I don't know.
I believe you.
Okay.
I didn't know that. That's cool. A lot of changes from the original story to this version. The dragon used to be imaginary, but that now became real. It only showed up in the original version like one time, and then a Disney animator was like, no.
Yeah, that's dumb. That's really that's stupid.
A stupid decision. And so they changed it. Fun fact, this is the first film with animation in it without any of Disney's 9 old men. They had all, I don't know if they had all retired by now, but they didn't work on it. And then, you know, critics were on it. Janet Maslin of the New York Times, the first female critic I've mentioned for the original movies, I think. She said it's the most energetic and enjoyable Disney movie in a long while and that kids may love it, but she notes that it's longer than it needs to be. Oh, my God. So true. And I just thought this was funny. She said that Helen Reddy, who played Nora, she didn't like her very much. She said she has a tendency to behave as if she were a very bright light bulb in a very small lamp.
What's that
I
mean?
I don't know what the... I don't know. But I thought it was funny.
So it sounds like a compliment.
It's not. It's the thing she said. Like
I'm struggling to understand what aspect of her is supposed to be the light bulb and what aspect of her or the world around her is supposed to be the lamp.
Listen, if there's one thing I've learned from autism, it's that you can't really like understand these cultural axia. You just have to kind of do like just kind of accept it and look for context. What did she say specifically? Miss Reddy is serviceable but undistinguished as an actress. She has a tendency to behave as if she were a very bright light bulb in a very small lamp, but she so often finds herself in the company of Misters Rooney, Dale, or Button that her scenes work well.
That clarifies nothing.
Yeah.
What a terrible analogy.
She's no Bosley Crothers, I'll tell
exactly.
you that. Is Helen Reddy? Maybe she was like a bigger like Broadway star. I should have looked this up. That's on me, team. She was Australian. She was a singer.
Okay. She is a very good singer.
Yeah.
I enjoy listening to her voice a lot more than that kid's.
Yeah, she had a number one song in 1972. She won a Grammy. More than a dozen top 40 hits.
Whoa.
Yeah, so she was, I guess, a pretty successful, popular singer, and they put her in the movie, and she's bad at acting, as are most singers, by the way. Don't stop it. What else? Gene Siskel, oh my God, finally, it's the Siskel era. Writing for the Chicago Tribune, felt the movie showed, quote, the same tired Disney formula. A gooey-faced kid in a phony soundstage world populated by old actors required to perform ancient vaudeville routines, end quote.
Exactly. That's exactly
it. He also says that parents taking their kids to this movie are, quote, selling out their children's imaginations at a cheap price.
Jeez.
And that, quote, Pete's Dragon is just TV fare on the widescreen. 2 out of 4 stars. I thought it would be lower reading those things. Mm-hmm. It sounded like a 1-star review, but I guess
maybe it's
generous.
That it feels very much like a dated movie. It feels really old fashioned. It feels early mid-60s musical.
Yeah, it definitely does. But like, I felt it was dated in a different direction. Mm-hmm. I felt, and I want to talk about one more review, but real quick. I felt like I was watching a Disney Channel original movie.
Yeah, 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 uh-huh, uh-huh.
Like from the 90s?
Uh-huh.
For the listeners who are either too old or too young to know what a DCOM is, when we were growing up, Disney Channel did like TV movies all the time.
They were so much fun. We've mentioned them before because it's how a lot of remakes feel. It's how a lot of Disney remakes feel. It's like they should, like, that's how Snow White feels to me. That's how... Yeah.
Snow White, the production value is way too high.
Yeah, I know.
But like that's they were very big. High School Musical 1 and 2 were Disney Channel original movies. Mm-hmm. And then rightfully, High School Musical 3 was a full release.
Can I tell you something?
What?
I've never seen High School Musical.
Oh, yeah. You're in for a treat.
I know the memes enough, but I really should sit down and watch them so that I really feel the memes in my soul.
It is pretty good. And then John Scoe for Time Magazine, by the way, Time Magazine in 1977, finally crediting the reviewers. although, and this is less a review and more a synopsis, called it a likable fantasy. Although he agrees that Disney uses too many cute orphans in its live action movies, saying, I just put the whole quote in because it's funny. An urchin of this description appears in every Disney movie, and the viewer is half convinced that Disney grows them on its own Devil's Island, using the cute ones for films and chaining the ugly ones to drafting tables to paint animated green dragons frame by agony. He was having a lot of fun.
That's
with this
hilarious.
One.
Writing bad reviews is so much fun.
It is. Well, it's not a bad review. It's like, it's fine. It was a pretty good review. One of the things I noticed, like, among reviewers is they're like, enough enough with the cute orphans. Yeah. We're sick of the cute orphans. And I'm like, how many cute orphans starred in Disney movies in like the 70s?
It must have been a fuck ton. I wonder how many of them were set around this era, because it seems to me like one of the things about a cute orphan is that they kind of stop existing after, well, what would you say, the Great Depression?
Yeah,
after the New Deal. They all starved. And then
Disney couldn't afford the island
anymore. Yeah, exactly.
That's where Lord of the Flies comes from.
And then the New Deal happens, and now we don't have orphans anymore.
We still have orphans. They're just called foster kids.
We orphans continue to exist, but they don't just I don't know, go out on the street and
there's no like
sell
Kenzie
newspapers
or whatever.
Yeah.
You're not going to see Oliver !! Singing a song.
Right. Not enough ragamuffins. That's our problem.
Everything's too stable nowadays. Can we get more parents to both die, please? I did not like this movie.
I thought it was dumb.
It was too long. I thought it was not good.
It's one of those horrible bad movies that is like, it's not just that it's kind of made poorly, it's that it's boring. It's uninteresting.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so rote, it's so by the book for what Disney was doing in that day that I wonder, I think a lot of modern filmmaking trends are going to kind of feel similar in a couple generations looking back, you know? Yeah. Like, I just
another fucking revolving hero shot is the guy, like, stands there with a slight chin implant.
Yeah. Locke and I just, we didn't watch most of it. We watched a couple episodes in full, but we scrubbed through most of the new season of The Witcher. And that was very much the feeling that I got, where it was like, this sucks, first of all, in, you know, just as a show, like qualitatively it's not good, but it's also so of today's filmmaking trends that I think people are gonna, you know, look back on it in the future and be like, oh yeah, I guess this is a show where it's a bunch of like, you know, plucky, diverse young adults in sort of like vaguely medieval outfits saying fuck and showing tits, but otherwise like unbelievably childish in every other way.
Yeah, there's I mean that's like a writing issue, which is super very true. I think it comes from the problem when you have, this is such a diversion, but you have like, I didn't like Game of Thrones, but I think like the quality, at least in the earlier parts, not in season one, because it looked like Xena Warrior Princess, but like starting in season two and onwards, like the quality is pretty undeniable. Mm-hmm. Storytelling is really interesting, very mature, very spooky, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's because George R. R. Martin is like pretty good at storytelling.
Mm-hmm. He's good at world building at the very least.
He's great at world building. And then like, and then those earlier seasons, like the creators follow the story really closely, and it's a good story, you know, works for a lot of stuff. And then everyone's like, oh shit, Game of Thrones, 16 million viewers. Like, we have to have our Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. And they're like, Wheel of Time, Lord of the Rings, The Witcher, which Netflix already ignoring that they have their Game of Thrones. It's called Stranger Things, and they take way too long between seasons. You know, and like just not, it's just like the Hollywood issue of like, they're like the execs, like they look for the wrong thing in the writers they hire.
They do. But then I will also contend though that this is a writer's issue, but it's also a production issue. Like season one of The Witcher looks pretty good. Okay. Like everything is framed properly. All the shots are composed properly. Like there's a saturation to a lot of the shots that I don't personally find compelling, but like but the, like there are coherent color stories being displayed, you know, and in this new season, oh my God, it's like a bowl of Fruity Pebbles just threw up on every single shot. It sucks.
Gross.
It's so terrible. Like there's nothing for the eye to land on, and it seems like the writers are like relying on the production team to sort of make what they're doing work, and the production team is kind of relying on the writers to make what to like justify what they're doing, and it's such a mess.
It's interesting that like the critics complain for this for Pete's Dragon.
Yeah.
Just to tie it in, just to keep us slightly on topic. They complained a lot about the soundstage stuff and how California the set feels. Which I didn't feel, but I guess it was a lot more obvious if you watched a lot of movies back then that every fucking thing was built somewhere in California. I don't know what Maine looks like, even though I've been there. So I bought it for Maine, but whatever. But just the sound staginess, because like, I think a really huge issue with this kind of our modern version of generic filmmaking is the green screen. And the Disney version of the green screen, that fucking LED thing that they have, that everyone's like, oh, it makes The Mandalorian look so good. And I watched it and I was like, no, it doesn't. You know, it would make The Mandalorian look good if they shot it in Tunis, like the original Star Wars. But it's just like, and I think one of the massive problems with more modern filmmaking is they rely so heavily on post-production.
Yeah.
Like the big studios do, because the big studios, like, you know, it's a situation, I believe, of like the studios want to control the process as much as possible.
Yeah.
And like, even if you have an exec on set, you can't control it to like the perfect amount. So they want it in post because then they can do market research on the cut and change all the end.
I feel like we talked, maybe it was somebody else I was talking about this with, but it's also that like, the same thing with performances that we've talked about, that I know we've talked about before, where it's like nobody really knows what any of this stuff around them is going to look like in the end. And also the writers don't know. So like nobody can interact with the stuff that's around them. Nobody can. Yeah. It's not good.
Even like Marvel and Marvel like does this thing where they're so fucking secretive about their scripts that they will film entire scenes between characters separately.
Oh my God. You know, so like grotesque.
Yeah, like the whatever the big Avengers movie coming out, the one with Doctor Doom, I don't remember the name. I'll probably see it, but I'll be upset about it. They're bringing in a lot of like the old like 2000s X-Men. And there was an interview with like one of the X-Men that's like, yeah, like I shot my scene. I don't know who I was acting with because it was just me.
That should never occur.
And it's like, this is literally acting 101. Acting is reacting. What are you going to react off of?
Right.
Nothing.
And it's so, and I think that has to account for a lot of the sort of uncanniness that we feel in a lot of modern filmmaking style, where it's like, I don't know, there's this sort of like floating feeling like nobody here really knows what's happening or like why anybody should care. And it's like, like you can't just have people in a room saying stuff. That's not what art is. That's not what we're doing here. This is supposed to be more than the sum of its parts. And in order for that to happen, people have to care. And you have to be able to be, you know, to accept some inefficiency to put people in a position to care.
Yes. But even on top of that, like the thing that I was going to bring up is I was watching this YouTube video talking about like the differences in shooting style, right? Because there are movies coming out that are really, I think, like really gorgeous. Like we both watched Begonia recently. You didn't like it because you have bad taste. And
you actually did turn my opinion a little bit. I've been reconsidering, and I think you actually are right about the ending. Yes. I think it makes more sense now. Yeah.
I love that movie because I felt a lot of like old school
Yeah.
techniques. Like And one of the big things is like they did really interesting shot composition that like, look, I don't know Yorgos's film process. Maybe there was some tweaks. Maybe there was some color. Maybe he did, you know, put some shadows where there weren't. Maybe he scrubbed out some towers in the background. I don't know. But a lot of the lighting that they use in that movie is not done in the bigger products because it's really fucking hard to do CGI when the lighting is complex.
Oh, interesting.
And so one of the things that happens, one of the reasons that I think the new Witcher looked so bad, maybe, is like, historically, comedies are shot very flat because you don't really care about how they look, right? You just want to see the performances. And dramas are shot with a lot of light and stuff, right? Like, watch Seven. Lighting is crazy in that movie.
The environment is supposed to evoke the emotional
but also because it looks interesting. Like, when you have actors just, like, moving their face around and squinting, you know, you want it to be an engaging shot. And how do you make a shot engaging? Fucking shadow. You know? But, like, modern movies are so CGI heavy that, like, everything is shot super flat. It looks like it's on a soundstage. And you can make a soundstage look realistic. It's happened plenty of times. A ton of movies. Well, most movies have some part of them shot on a soundstage. And if you have a good lighting team and you have a great DP, like, you can make that shit look so good. But these big movies and these big properties, they're shot for CG. You know? And so, like, part of that is the lack of interactivity that we've talked about before, especially in the Lady and the Tramp video or pocket episode. But a big thing that makes things boring to look at, and I think part of the reason why, like, everyone's on their phone when they watch movies is, like, because the light, it's just boring to watch. Because it needs to be, because otherwise it's too complicated to do to animate or to do the CG.
That is a mark in Pete's Dragon's favor, I guess, to bring us back to topic once again.
Yeah.
There's just so little to say about this movie.
The worse the movie, the bigger the tangents.
It's just that, just be more exciting if you're going to be a bad movie, you know? Have something for us to talk about. But
I was just going to say, like, I think Pete's Dragon was just part of, like, the Disney assembly line. You know, they have the story structure. They have the cute orphan. They have the quirky old people.
Yeah. But I do, like, the movie is the most interesting when the dragon is in frame. Elliot, who's inexplicably named Elliot.
Yeah, a lot of critics said that too.
It's a dumb name for a dragon. It's fine. It's one of my favorite innovations of the new one. They
explain the name.
Yeah, the dragon is still named Elliot, but it actually makes sense. So the movie's most interesting when the dragon is in frame because it feels like they are doing something a little bit innovative and a little bit creative. I'm so sorry. My cat is sharpening her claws on my desk chair. I'm sure you can hear it. And like, they're not, like, because CG doesn't exist in this era, they're not trying to make it look real at all. It's like it's Dom Bluth animation just kind of spliced into the movie, and there's no explanation for that, and there doesn't need to be any explanation for that. You know what's happening. You understand what's going on, you know. It's part of the whole magic of the dragon. It's okay that the dragon is a 2D animated dragon. It's fine. And it amazingly, nobody seemed to have an issue with that, you know.
And they shouldn't. I think, like,
no, they shouldn't.
One of my favorite older movies, and sorry for people who were alive when it came out, is Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, it's great.
Which comes out in 1988, and I was really interested. I was like, I wonder how far apart these are, because the way they interact in that one with the animation is so stupid good. And then in this one, it's not. Like, it was
painstaking.
Cute. Yeah, it's cute, but, like,
yeah.
Every, Like, there's not a single frame where Pete is interacting with a live action element right.
No. And every time he does interact with anything live action, you can tell they really had to plan around it.
Yeah.
And it had to be, like, just right.
And they still got the eye lines wrong, like, 95% of the time. I really like, there's a scene in the movie where, right at the beginning, actually, where Pete is feeding Elliot apples.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching the apple because one of the things that I think I noticed is that the arc of the apple,
mm-hmm.
once it hits Pete's mouth, it goes through his neck. So, like, they drew Pete in that frame to cover the apple falling down. And I thought that was, like, that was fun. That was a cool thing. It's cool as sort of very, I don't even know if the movie's bad. It's just, like, blah.
Yeah, it's
as blah as the movie is. Like, it's cool to see those techniques, and it's cool to see how they tried to do that. And
yeah, I don't think it's like an invaluable movie.
No,
but I also really just it just doesn't translate to today's sensibilities in any way. And it's like, this isn't just a timing thing. We just talked about 101 Dalmatians, and it's so good. It's so good start to finish. You know?
Although 101 Dalmatians is came out 16 years before Pete's Dragon.
Exactly. Just so strengthens my point. It's so long. It's so very much in the style of like
any Disney movie from the 70s.
Any Disney movie for sure, but just like any kind of like this sort of it's part of a musical trend that had already died by then, you know. Like nobody I don't think that in 1977 a whole lot of people were clamoring to sit down and watch a 2+ hour long, you know, vaudeville style musical.
I had read something that Disney was kind of, the movie made money, like I think the budget was like 10 million. It made something in the 30 million range, excuse me, or the box office was somewhere in the 30 million range. And I had read somewhere that it was a bit of a disappointment for Disney. They were hoping for like another Mary Poppins. And I looked it up. Mary Poppins came out in like 1964. It came out like 13 years before Pete's Dragon. And they were like, let's get another one of those.
The time is ripe, yeah.
Too late, guys. You missed. You're not going to get another Mary Poppins until, you know, Mary Poppins Returns.
Are we going to do that one?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know about legacy sequels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably not. Never mind.
Probably not. Yeah.
To anybody whose interest I piqued with that statement, do away with it. We're not doing Mary Poppins.
Or email us at withfeelingpod@gmail.com and let us know. What was your favorite song in this movie?
Probably the I forget what the song is called, but when our like resident Flim Flam man arrives in town and has his like Pirelli's Magical Elixir song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
I love a Flim Flam man. I love a
Flim Flam man.
Yeah. Yeah.
A scam man.
Yeah. And
a Harold Hill.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is like this sort of turn of the century era that, you know, I wonder if any, because like that was kind of like, that was the era that Walt Disney was born in. That was what he was like sort of nostalgic for. And mm-hmm. he's dead now. So I wonder why they set this movie in that era, unless that was a trend that had already been established by previous live action Disney movies. I don't know.
That's a very good question.
But yeah, the turn of the 20th century, very, very much like our own era. Just prime snake oil salesman time. Grifters all around.
Yeah, the telegraph existed and the government regulation had not caught up.
Yeah, yeah.
Making sure people didn't like.
Yeah, it's precisely the same as the internet. So yeah, that's my favorite song. I like there's typically with those sorts of Flim Flam Man songs, there's a lot of like fun wordplay and whatever. And that was the case for that song. It's my favorite song.
Yeah.
There were like fucking 12 songs though. There were so many.
There were a lot of songs.
And so many, and most of them were just utterly forgettable.
Yeah. I wrote down a couple favorite songs and like I watched this yesterday and I don't remember them. So
I know. I watched this like hours ago.
Yeah. <know? laughs> Okay. I feel like we can move on.
You don't, you're not even gonna mention your favorite songs?
I don't know. The Flim Flam song.
Okay.
And then the one that the Flim Flam Man and the Flim Flam Man's friend do together.
Yeah.
Later. The Every Little
Money
Piece.
Money, money by the pound.
Yeah.
Or was it another one? There's so
No,
many.
It was that one. Uh-huh. It's called Every Little Piece, but okay. that was that song.
Yeah, where they're talking about how to slice up the dragon and sell them for parts. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you Pretty have a grim. Favorite part?
No. I don't like my this favorite, movie very much.
My favorite part was when Elliot and Pete first come to town and Elliot's just fucking everything up and he breaks the fence and he steps in the concrete.
That's true. I really like the stepping in the concrete effect. It's not completely clear to me how they did that, and I think it works pretty well.
My guess mm-hmm. is they had shapes underneath that they pulled down.
Mm.
So it made the depression.
Mm, yeah.
I
thought that worked.
But yeah, I thought it was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This episode is brought to you by our patrons, who are cool dudes and also non-dudes and others, et cetera, and so forth. Let me tell you their names. Such incredible patrons like Janelle Rose, A Long Way Home, Ryder, Seamus Brittag, The Wizard Sober, Mark Wampler, C-Tone, Wellen Inspector, Joshua Paul, Fading into Obscurity, The Antithesis, Wells Harrell, Forrest Cochran, Ted the Dead, Ryan Faber, Andrew Ray, Samoa, Gun Parade, Colleen Burns, Chimerathon, Charlotte Detweiler, James Trendle, Sky Kalane, Christine H., Chloe, Dana Loy, Donnie, Aaron Summers, Thomas McFarland. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
You're all great.
Thanks.
Couldn't do it without you.
Yeah, it's that people want to give us a little money for this. Makes me very happy. Yeah.
Makes me want to do a whole second season. What? Gasp.
Yeah.
Oh.
And a little middle season, maybe.
And a perhaps. Little bonus season.
Yeah,
oh.
A little 1.5 season.
Oh. I'm vamping until I can see, like, did we say we would thank everybody or just the people who give us slightly more money? Whoops. I've accidentally been thanking... The
everybody.
People giving us everybody okay, and not just
great.
The people.
That's fine. Everybody deserves thanks and recognition.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Gonna have to change that.
Yeah. I'm sure all of you wish Pete's Dragon Save. Was a better movie, so there'd be more to talk about, but
yeah. This is gonna probably be our worst episode of the season. That's all right. Let's talk about the second episode, the second movie. Tell me about it.
Okay. Guess what I didn't do?
Research.
No, I did
write
research.
Write a synopsis.
I did not write a synopsis. So I'm gonna remember to the best of my ability. And if okay. I really, really fail, then we can pull up the Wikipedia and check. So this movie begins with the orphanage of Pete, young boy, driving the car with his...
Orphaning.
Orphaning, do you, you think? Yeah.
Well, because orphanage has a definition. And
orphanage has a definition, but...
Go to buy orphans for $50 plus legal.
Yeah, but I think it's like a homonym. Is that what the word is? The word that sounds the same and is maybe spelled the same and means something different depending on context. I think it's pretty clear what I mean.
His parents die. A deer jumps into the road and they make the classic city people mistake of swerving.
Don't
Listen,
swerve.
Guys,
hit the deer.
PSA.
Just hit the deer.
The deer is less important than your life unless you're a fascist.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want your car to crash and to die and for your child to have to run into the forest and befriend a dragon? No, you don't. Hit the deer.
Don't swerve.
Don't swerve, hit the deer. So while Pete and his parents are driving, he's like learning to read. He's like 5 years old, and he's reading this book called Elliot Gets Lost. This adorable little children's book. It's so cute. I liked it a lot. I love children's books. And so this is the reason when he gets lost in the forest and meets Elliot the dragon that he names the dragon Elliot. Several years later, Pete and Elliot are like living their happy lives in the forests of the Pacific Northwest. They are found by this forest ranger played by Bryce Dallas Howard, whose father, played by Robert Redford, Rip, insists that he has seen a dragon in the forest. Nobody believes him, but there is a sort of legend of this big green dragon living in the forest. So they take Pete home. They figure out that he's this, you know, this missing kid whose parents were found in a car crash. Meanwhile, Carl Urban, logging employee Carl Urban, like finds the dragon, captures the dragon. His character's dumb. Dude, Carl Urban,
disservice. This is Bryce's husband's brother.
Oh, is it?
In the movie.
Oh.
Not in real life.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Her husband is played by
a different guy.
The guy from Yellowstone. The guy from... Fuck it, doesn't matter.
Is it Milo Ventimiglia?
It is... No, no, God, no. It is not Milo Ventimiglia, no.
Okay.
I forget his name. He's good. He's in American Horror Story, too. He was in American Beauty, I think, was his first, like, big role.
Yeah. Pete and Bryce and the daughter break the dragon out.
Yeah, so they break the dragon out. The dragon escapes.
There's a car chase.
There's a little car chase. I have so many animals in the room with me.
Carl Urban has a change of heart when his family almost dies.
Yeah, they do that thing where the dragon escapes, and then they share a meaningful look, and Carl Urban like slowly nods his head in understanding of the gravity of his behavior. Yeah.
Oh my god.
So then they the little family adopts Pete, and in the last scene, there's like this like cute little folk song throughout about like where dragons come from, Elliot flies away, and in the last scene they go up north where the dragons are supposed to come from, and they find a lot of dragons all living there together.
Did they find a lot of dragons?
Yeah.
Oh my god, I was so checked out of this movie. I thought that they only found Elliot. That's embarrassing.
No, they found like five or six okay. Dragons. Yeah,
they found a herd of dragons.
Yeah. So this movie was directed by David Lowery, who you may remember as the guy who did the Peter Pan remake and also a bunch of other good independent movies, which we talked about in the Peter Pan episode. He did Ain't Them Body Saints and Ghost Story.
Green Knight.
Yeah, it was after Ain't Them Body Saints won Sundance that he got offered this movie. He got an agent through that movie. The agent brings in Pete's dragon, and he didn't want to do it at first. He said, I wasn't interested in the remake game, but I remember while editing Ain't Them Body Saints, my agent emailed me that Disney was interested in remaking Pete's dragon using only the title, Lowery said. Outside of that title, they didn't want to have anything to do with the original, and they definitely didn't want it to be a musical.
Smart.
Yeah, if Disney truly wanted to use the title of the original as a means to get an original movie made, that appealed to me. So he agreed to do it. At first, he only wrote the script. And then later on, they like offered him the actual director's job. And he turned that down also. And then changed his mind and took it.
And he saw how much they would pay.
Yeah.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with a good indie director taking a studio.
Certainly movie not. To certainly make not. Money. Certainly not.
One for them, one for you. You know what I mean?
Gus so badly wants to do one for them.
Fucking pay me.
This is one of the cheapest Disney remakes. I think, what did we say? Cinderella cost, I think, like, it was under $100 million. Yeah, it was like something 90, like 90. 80, yeah. 90? I think this is actually the cheapest of all of them, unless Lady and the Tramp. Lady and the Tramp might have been in the 40s.
No.
I don't remember.
Well, Lady and the Tramp was like a Disney Plus movie.
Yes. But this one was very much in theaters, which makes it a little bit remarkable that it was $65 million. That's not very much money. Yeah.
That's like $80 million in today's money.
Yeah. Which is like, I mean, that's not nothing, you know, but like,
that's one slice of bread.
That
I'm
is
gonna keep making that joke anytime we mention any amount of money.
That is a minivan from 1997. So $65 million. It makes $143 million. It's wow. Quite successful. People liked this movie. It came out in 2016, and you know, as with Cinderella, as with Alice in Wonderland, we're still in theater times. This is still when is like that I think what we will in the future come to realize is the tail end of a pretty distinct period of theater culture.
I think it'll come back.
Oh, I think so too, but it'll be a different era, you know, just for distribution and for the audience. It's just a different feel, you know. It was expected mm-hmm. that you were going to go see a movie in theaters, and that's just really isn't the case anymore. It still exists, but it's not expected. Yeah, pretty weird initial foray into remaking. but it was this one plus Cinderella plus this sort of like weird kind of tangential remake of Alice in Wonderland that convinces Disney that this is going to be a great idea. What's weird is that it doesn't seem like they learned a whole lot from this movie. I don't know if it's because like the original is not a very good movie, and so there's a lot to improve on. And it's like, you know, if you're gonna remake a lot of critics mentioned this, that like if you're gonna remake movies, you should probably remake the bad ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know. And
there was mm-hmm. actually something I just read about the Anaconda remake. That was like, yeah. The Anaconda remake is like a very good, is good evidence of like redo bad movies. Let good
sure,
movies
totally.
Stay
that's,
good.
Yeah, and that's fun. That's a fun project. I'm excited for that movie, but I have to say I really fucking hate the trailer. Trailer pisses me off so much. I'm so over trailers giving me information about the plot, like you know, like deep into the second act of the movie. I don't want to know.
Have I told you? So my least favorite trailer I've ever seen. Thanks for asking. the movie Coda from 2021. One, I love that movie. Mm-hmm. It's an excellent movie. I saw the trailer at a Lemley when I went to see The Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great trailer because there's a moment where she's singing on stage. Oh, it's a happy, singy, deaf family, whatever. She's singing on stage and then like the music fades out. And then the deaf family are like, what's going on? And I was like, oh my God, incredible. And then it kept going.
Oh,
the trailer kept going.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you end the trailer right there,
mm-hmm.
incredible, mm-hmm. great trailer.
Mm-hmm.
But they did that thing and they just showed shots from the rest of the movie. And it's like, now I fucking know what happens.
Yeah. I think there's something about like, I don't know how it happened that trailers are all being reworked this way, where it's just like, it's like they want to, it's like they're expecting the audience to want to know every single thing that happens so that they will know whether they are going to like it in advance. You know, it's not about like enticing an audience to come see your movie. It's about like letting them know what's going to be in the movie so they can decide, you know, whether they want to waste their time on it or not.
This is stupid.
It's stupid.
This is a stupid decision.
We need to let people be bored again.
so
that they will watch interesting movies and make better trailers.
You were talking about how this is one of the movies that convinces Disney to go full bore into the remakes.
Yes.
But that Disney didn't like, but not just this movie. Like, it seems like they didn't learn anything from any of the movies that sort of got them into it. Because it's like, maybe not Alice in Wonderland, but like Cinderella and this movie are both like pretty inexpensive.
Yeah.
This movie especially is mm-hmm. very different from the original one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have kind of three examples of strategies that you can take to remaking a movie with Peace Dragon, Cinderella, and Alice in Wonderland, all of which work. but all of which are justified in different ways. Pete's Dragon is you know, taking the sort of like basic strokes of the movie and just turning them into something else, you know, like different time period, different circumstances for this kid, different character arcs, right? Different location. Cinderella is a pretty, you know, by the book, like they are remaking it. They claim they're not, but they are. They are remaking Cinderella. Yeah.
And, but they focus, they pick something to really focus on and make the movie about and justify why it exists.
Yeah. And
which they don't ever do again.
No, and in Cinderella's case, it was like fashion and you know, that kind of thing. And that's how they sold it, and that's a pretty good way to approach that. And then for Alice in Wonderland, it's like, well, you can kind of remake it by not remaking it and just sort of hearkening back to the idea of of Alice in Wonderland and how it
I still consider it a sequel.
Yeah, it is.
It's a sequel remake.
Yeah,
it's a sequel remake. I thought those words would go better together. God. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. I'm struggling.
Yeah, they just broke your linguistic processing center. So, Disney just apparently learned every single wrong lesson from these three successful remakes that they had put out, and decided that actually, and what this seems like a, you know, maybe another sort of insight into some executive decision making being made there, where it's like they see what works and then they think, I know better, though. The audience may be responding to this, but I don't think they really know, you know?
I think it's like, I think about this a lot with art, and especially like the way that studios all kind of chase like an idea.
Yeah.
Like there were a couple years, and it's starting to ebb finally, or flow, whatever, wane, I don't know, where everything was a superhero movie. And if it wasn't a superhero movie, it was like a superhero movie.
Yeah, it was shot like a superhero movie.
And you know, like, and it's like, it's finally ending, and we're still getting some, like, How You See Me 3 is a superhero movie, right? But then Begonia, which is excellent, definitely not. Always Stealing, definitely not. Is that what it's called?
Caught Stealing,
definitely not. The other movies that I've liked this year that I don't remember.
Like, God, what a good year for movies.
I know.
It's such a treat.
But I think the reason that the genres that people like work is because they are like a part of a broader market, you know, a broader play. Like if you walk into a market, like a real market, and there's some like really good falafel, you're going to be like, oh, sick. I love falafel. But if every other vendor there sees how much you like that falafel, and then everybody just sells falafel and it's only falafel, you're going to be like, fuck, dude, I'm really sick of falafel. I wish I could have like chicken shawarma. Yeah. But nobody sells chicken shawarma anymore because everybody just makes falafel. And I think that like, I think this is a broad problem with the American capitalism because a lot of, I don't want to talk economics because I'm not good at it, but when you have such short time frames as American companies do, like you chase the quick profit.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, anyone on earth could have told you, maybe not anyone, most people who care about movies could have told you, even when the superhero stuff was really taking off with like the first Avengers movie, that like in 10 years, in 15 years, maybe in 5 years, although that didn't happen, like people are not going to want superhero movies anymore.
Marvel just acted like people were going to be into this for fucking ever, which is like a really proud American television executive tradition, you know,
but it's not run into
the ground.
I don't think it's American. I think it's just American, period. Like,
yeah, like, I was trying to like, you know, constrain my statement a little bit, but I guess we do that with movie sequels too, so
but it's, you know, and it's like there's no foresight. Like as soon as the profit vector or whatever is identified, everything has to go into that, and it's like you've missed out on so much. Like you've lost the talent to make other movies. Mm-hmm. You have to relearn how to shoot good again. You have to relearn how to shoot for the camera and not for the editing suite. Mm-hmm. You have to relearn how to act for the actors. Because, like, no offense, there are a lot of people, very, very charming actors, but, like, when your only role is superheroes for, like, 8 years, mm-hmm. and you go back to do, like, a comedy or this or that, it's like, you're not going to hit it.
Yeah, and it's also just something. Like a, it's kind of pretending to be a new technology, this sort of, like, you know, CG, that the kind of post-production culture we're in right now. In the same degree that, like, film is a different technology from theater. Film is introduced, and the first movies for 20 or 30 years, it takes a minute for film to establish what the grammar of this new medium is going to be. And it's mm-hmm. like, and so much of the acting style was very theatrical because that's yes. how people were trained. You have to relearn how to, you know, what film acting is. Film acting is a lot yeah. different from stage acting.
And then mm-hmm. even after talkies were introduced, mm-hmm. like, it takes another little bit totally. Of time uh-huh. to relearn that.
Yeah.
This, once the cameras got smaller, it took right, time yeah. to learn how to do that.
This stuff, this is not the same. This is not the same. This is not a different strategy of acting. You're just like, this is a constraint. This is yeah. not a new medium. You're just telling actors to do as much or more with nothing.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It's I forgot what we were talking about.
As with the discussion of the first Pete's Dragon, this has really not a whole lot to do with the new Pete's Dragon because it is full of real life people, not on a bunch of sound stages, and they like actually are in really beautiful places. Yeah. And they, clearly are acting opposite each other. The dragon, I don't think, looks terrible. I think it actually works pretty well. Lowry was the one who insisted upon the dragon being fuzzy.
That's a good choice.
I think so. He says he had Falcor in mind. He said the dragon
from
being fuzzy.
The Never Ending Story.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Weird movie. and he said that he thought the dragon being fuzzy made the idea that some kid would bond with this like nightmare creature he finds in the forest a little more believable, mm-hmm. you know? Which I agree with. I like that.
Yeah.
There was a critic from the Times that
the New York Times?
No, the Times from the UK.
Ah, the Times and the Sunday Times. Rupert Murdoch's UK Wall Street Journal.
Yes, indeed. He said, Ed Potten, he said, in the original, I'm not going to do the accent, but just imagine the accent because it makes this, his like curmudgeonliness.
Pip, pip.
Yeah.
Fish and chips. That wasn't an accent. Sorry.
Potten said, in the original, the dragon was a cheesy 2D animated one. This time, it's stylishly rendered in CGI, but with one problem. It's furry. It looks more like a giant green Great Dane with wings. You half expect Pete to throw him a stick. Call me a dragon purist, but where are the scales? Dragon aside, this is the kind of well-crafted but uninspired schmaltz that could have been made at any point in the past 40 years. I think
this
that's
guy,
a stupid review.
This guy has never been to Chinese New Year, and it shows.
True.
I was imagining it with the accent, and it's hilarious.
It's so much better, isn't it?
Oh my god,
I really should work on that so that I can read future stuffy British critics with the disdain they deserve. What do you mean it could have been made at any point in the past 40 years? What's that supposed to mean?
I think it means it's not like the story it tells is not a very timely story.
Must they
which
be?
Which I don't No, I don't think so. Yeah. But I think, like, you know, sometimes critics get it in their heads that, like, this is a thing. It's why you watch, like, a pretty shit movie, but, like, because it's, like, an all-female cast mm-hmm. or something, the critics are like,
right,
no offense to women, are like, wow, it's... God, it's so good, mm-hmm. but it's like, that's...
We got a little bit of that with Alice in Wonderland, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know. I always find that super patronizing. But
yeah,
like critics fall into their own traps.
I mean, this is a story about a, you know, a lost kid figure, like finding a family, like that. This seems like a pretty, I don't know, seems like a fairly timeless story to me. I don't think that it's a story that is much changed by being. I don't know why I'm picking on Ed Potten, I guess, but like the point, I guess, is that critics really liked this movie, and the ones that didn't seemed to be kind of nitpicking about it. You know, I do think it's like kind of its time and its style. The music is like very, I mean, it's very Pacific Northwest, but it's also very like, you know, it's not quite Stomp Clap Hey. It's like, I like this style of music, that all the needle drops, you know, but it's like very sort of hipster folk.
Yeah.
Which is a vibe. What did you think?
I didn't like it, and I don't know why, because I like parts of it are really good, but like something about like how like cinematic it was kind of bothered me. I don't want to be mean. Every movie that Bryce Dallas Howard is in, like, I'm trying to say this in the nicest way I can, but I don't think I can say it nicely. Like, she ruins every movie that she's in.
She's very actorly. I feel similarly about her as I do about Anne Hathaway. Not to like call out Anne Hathaway. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sort of.
Theater kid energy. She's very.
Yeah, it's very like she always acts. She feels like someone who took like a couple acting classes and was like, I got it. No more. Don't ever need to learn again.
I mean, she's kind of a nepo baby, so that maybe it won't be the case.
She's the daughter of like one of the biggest producers ever of all time.
What do you think about 50-50? I like that movie. I don't think she ruins it.
Was she in 50-50? Yeah. I didn't remember her. I just remember Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Okay. It's beside the point. Please continue. Okay. That also takes place in the Northwest.
I was trying to think like why so much of my watch time in this movie was like, why don't I like Bryce Dallas Howard? And she was in a scene with Robert Redford. I don't remember what scene, but I think I figured it out because Robert Redford is incredible. And like, this is not a very juicy part, and he's still just like,
yeah, he nails
fabulous to watch. And I think it's because like when Bryce delivers her lines, it feels like she's trying to get her lines out. There's a sort of like very consistent rhythm to how she talks in everything. It's very like, and then I went to the park and I had a picnic with more intonation than that, but like that kind of rhythm. And I would listen to her line and I started like keeping the beat of her line and it fit in.
That's
and I would listen to Robert Redford and he would be like, bup, 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 bup.
Yeah.
Bup, 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 bup. And I think like, I don't think this is the only thing, but it is something I noticed where like he talks jazz and she talks pop music.
Interesting.
And I'm not.
That's an analogy that works. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean by that.
But like between
one is
this,
formulaic and the other one is improvisational.
Yeah. And it's a lot more interesting to listen and watch Robbie than it is. So like Bryce like does the job, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's like you hire, so like she does the job and then he like is a master. That's not fair. He is literally whatever, you know. It's like it's a caricature. Bryce Dallas Howard is a caricature painter in Central Park, and Robert Redford is Michelangelo. They're doing the same thing, but it's so like, and can I be honest with you? I think a lot of people. I obviously think I'm completely right about this, right? Like, I don't entertain the thought that she brings things to movies, which is very elitist of me, I understand. But I think everybody else also agrees with me. They just don't know it.
I was is the most arrogant thing I've ever heard you say.
That's
I can't believe you said that into a microphone.
Because, well, it's because, like, there's a lot of people who are like, sure, movies are worse, but, like, what are you going to do? Or, like, movies are fine. Movies aren't bad. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. But they haven't, like, seen a movie in 10 years because they've never felt that desire to go to the theater. I think, like, Robert's style of acting and these older styles of acting that some people definitely have. I think Emma Stone does it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jesse Plemons does it. That's why people love him so much. Like, that kind of intensity people really like, even though they might not have the language to know that they like it.
Mm-hmm.
And they fall into that trap that we've talked about with critics a couple of times where it's like, it's a movie that seven out of 10.
It's a movie. Right? So it's fine. It's great. Somebody made it. You should be nice to them and so they pin it onto the refrigerator. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they watch these very mediocre performances. It's like
as if filmmakers do it for fucking charity, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like they watch these very mediocre performances or this very mediocre directing or this very weak writing. And they're like, well, they told the story and they looked hot. So I'm okay with it. But then like their interest over time for movies gets less and less because they're not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just need more interesting people. I'm recognizing that I did earlier say like the director was too cinematic, which kind of, you know. I'll take that back. I rescind that.
I think it's a competently made movie. I think it's got like there's a unity of aesthetic that I think works. I don't think the dragon looks stupid, and it really could have. I think he pretty successful.
I think it looks a little stupid.
Well, it looks a little stupid because
it has a moose face.
Yeah, the original Peace Dragon looks a little stupid.
Oh, the original Peace Dragon looks incredibly stupid.
And I think that if you're gonna carry that precise aesthetic into a remake, I think he did it pretty well. You know, I'm not sure exactly what is meant by the whole motif of the dragon changing colors and like turning into a brighter shade of green when touched by a kindred spirit or whatever. I don't get it.
didn't get that at all. I'm sure there was something fucking sick in the action line that just did not.
You know what I will appreciate though, and that I see a lot less of in newer movies, especially movies made for kids, is it's a small moment, but I appreciated it a lot when Bryce Dallas Howard tells Pete, I don't know, the line is something like, "I think you're the bravest boy I've ever met," which is exactly what like the last thing his mother ever said to him before they crashed their car and died. Hit the deer, don't swerve.
I did literally write down PSA, don't swerve.
A lesser movie would in that moment like do some sort of contrived flashback to the beginning. And he didn't. He just trusted that the audience would pay attention enough to understand like the character beat that's happening here. And I appreciate that.
There is so little that I hate more than that.
Yeah. It's awful. Flashback. It's a terrible storytelling mechanism. And it's like the more
it offends me.
Yeah, me too. It's like and like I think it degrades people's ability to watch movies, you know, because like it's like if you are constantly just as an industry like holding people's hands and spoon feeding them throughout an entire movie, they fucking forget how to watch movies, you know. And they don't expect to have to maintain their attention span for longer than like 10 minutes.
4 seconds.
Yeah, four seconds, yeah. That's probably more realistic.
I felt that this movie, we talked about in the Peter Pan episode, we talked about like how serious that movie felt. I felt a similar seriousness.
It is a similar seriousness, but I think it works a little better. I think it's I think its sentimentalism is sort of outweighing the seriousness of it, or I guess makes more sense with the seriousness of it, because Peter Pan is just like, you know, as I said, it's the same director.
Goofy. So
yeah, and Peter Pan as a character doesn't take anything seriously, and the story is whimsical, not sentimental. These are two different, right. you know, modalities of genre. And so, I think it works a little better here. I think it's like, it, I don't know, the vibe is very gentle and very soothing. It's like kind of a nice background movie, I guess, in a way that makes Peter Pan just like kind of like sinister, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. I feel that. What was your favorite part?
There's so little to talk about with Pete's Dragon. Oh my God.
Yeah.
What's my favorite part?
You know what's interesting, but actually before we talk about that, I'm confused as to why they remade this movie when every other one that they've done, like there are other big Disney classics to remake before.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I couldn't find any information about that. I'm just not sure. I don't know if, like, the only thing that I can think of is that, like, they're trying to, you know, dip their toe in the remake game, and they're trying to do that with a property that doesn't matter very much, you know. Like, if Pete's Dragon flops, it's not a big deal. You can either, like, you can blame it on one thing or another and either continue remaking stuff and just use, you know, just try it again with something else, or you can use it as an excuse to abandon the venture entirely, and it you know, might be less of a risk to the company, maybe. That's the only thing I can think of. Yeah, otherwise I have no clue at all.
All right. What was your favorite part?
Oh, you know what? My favorite part is when he runs away from the hospital. After they catch Pete and they send him to the hospital.
He runs through town.
Yeah, perspective shifts, and they go to see him, and he's like darted out the window, and he runs through town and all this stuff, because he's like 10 years old, but he left civilization when he was 5, so he's seeing like all these people and all these crowds and all these, like, you know,
Is that the one where he hitches on the back of the school bus?
That
was fun.
He wakes up in the hospital bed, and there's like a red balloon tied to his bed, and he's like, "What is that?" He's like freaked out by it because he's never seen a balloon before.
Knocks,
I guess,
it away, and it comes right. Yeah, that was really cute.
I liked that. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your favorite part?
Probably that part, too. My favorite part would have been the chase at the end, but there was too much CGI, and I was like, when they hit the truck, I was like, just hit a truck. How much could a truck cost? $20,000? Just break a truck.
Especially an old truck.
I know.
Probably pick up a truck like that for like $2,000.
Just break it. I get using CGI for the dragon. Dragons are hard to catch, but like, it's a truck. Just hit it. It looks better. It looks so much better.
It's probably even cheaper.
It might be.
Then rendering CGI truck and destroying it.
Yeah, but it's like stuntmen, stunt preparation days. I guess. You have to be running a lot of cameras. You're going to break a couple cameras on the stunt. Probably. I don't know. Yeah. Made me sad. But yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, I didn't hate it.
I don't know.
I didn't hate it.
I don't think either of them are really like going to make your life better.
No,
if you watch
I don't
them.
Think so. But I do think that if you... I think this is like a pretty okay kids movie to like watch with your child, you know.
Yeah,
it's a nice message. I think it's done pretty well. I think the like everybody's character arc is coherent. Everything is competently made. Like that's just not enough for I think either of us to sing its praises as if it's doing something insane.
And if you're gonna watch the first one, be high. On something safe.
I should have been. Oh my God. That really would have improved the experience. It's not 2.5. It's long. It's like 2 hours and 20 minutes.
It's 2 hours and 8 minutes.
Is it?
It's
oh my God, long. It felt longer.
Yeah. I was like at that hour and a half mark, I was like, okay, let's end it. Kept going.
Yeah. That's one of the nicest things about the new one is that it's like a tidy 90 minutes.
I know. I was expecting it to be much longer, but it wasn't. which is nice.
Is it Snow White speaking like of, over 2 hours?
It's so ugh. So long.
Anyway,
thanks for listening. Right?
Were you?
we can wrap it up.
Were you gonna say you said speaking of, and then I?
Well, I was gonna say speaking of a tight 90, but oh. we're only 81 minutes.
Yeah, this is a short episode, and I don't think there's any way to get around that. There's just not a whole lot to say about Peace Dragon. It's also probably not like good podcasting form for me to give excuses for why this episode is shorter than the other episodes.
Let's just. It's a worse movie, you know. Instead of on your car ride to and from work, it'll just be to work. That's okay. So, you know, you don't really have to see either Pete's Dragon movie.
No,
What should people watch instead?
What should people watch instead? Probably Begonia.
Yes.
Yeah.
Watch Begonia again.
Yeah, my opinion changed. I initially really didn't like it, and Gus swayed my opinion. Congratulations.
Can I tell you, that's exactly what happened with my mom.
Yeah, you said that, but I mean, did her opinion change because of the same thing that changed my
opinion?
Well,
she watched it at a film festival before it came out, and she got to liking it on her own. But like, they rated it when they came out. She went with like four other people. They rated it when they came out. They all put 1 out of 5.
Oh my God!
And then within 4 days, they were all like, "This movie's so fucking good."
That sucks for the movie. I mean, it seems like it's doing fine despite them, but
yeah, I loved it right away. I think it's outstanding.
I loved it. So I loved 95% of it, and then the ending took me out. But you've convinced me. It's fine. I'll watch it again, and I think I will like it better. Yeah.
Yeah. I already recommended Begonia, so I'm gonna say watch Pluribus.
Oh yeah, it's Pluribus is great too. Oh, it's so much fun.
It's weird.
It's super weird. It's like great satire.
There is still good art, guys.
Yeah,
it exists.
Yeah. I guess I mean, I don't know if I recommend this one, but I am gonna like make a little video about it. It did get me thinking a lot. So I saw Predator Badlands. It was cute. it's maybe a little too cute. It's like not a.
Is it spooky or can I watch?
No, you can watch it. It's an action movie. It's not an nice. Action horror. It's not a sci-fi horror, which is like a kind of a departure. I really love the Predator franchise. I think it's super bizarre.
The
and
first Predator is really good.
It's great.
The second so Predator is really good in a very different
yes.
way.
Yes, it's a fascinating franchise. I'm gonna do a big long deep dive video sometime next year.
That's really cool.
And this new one, I think it's like. I don't know if it's a great Predator movie, but it is a good action movie, I think.
Cool.
And it is like kind of taking the franchise in an interesting new direction. So you could watch that
awesome.
If you want to.
Yeah, I probably will. I got a lot of time tomorrow. I'll go see a movie.
Yeah, you might like it.
Yeah, great. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening to our 10th episode of Once More With Feeling, podcast about, I mean, in this case, like weird original movies and then like pretty like middling modern remakes. What do I talk about now? Patreon. If you want to support us, we got a Patreon in the show notes. Come join our cool little movie club. We had a really good discussion on Begonia.
We did.
The other day.
Yeah, the Discord server.
Made me happy. It made me start to believe in the power of social media, which I normally hate.
I don't think Discord counts as social media. That's a private.
It literally does.
No.
It literally counts.
Oh, God. In a literal sense, it is media that is social, yes.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But it's no more social media than like a you know, a website forum in 2004 is social media.
Oh, okay, cool. Made me believe in the power of 2004 era website forums again. You can follow us on various social medias at With Feeling Pod, although I'm pretty sure only our Instagram is active right now. But maybe
but we do
more
post
in the future.
Stuff on Instagram.
Yeah, we post stuff on Instagram, mostly clips, whatever. Also YouTube, and then if you have questions, comments, concerns, if you want to. So I always try to reference something from the episode, but I forgot everything.
such a forgettable movie.
If you want to email us for whatever reason, withfeelingpod@gmail.com. I think that's it. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Bye.
Outro music. Once more with feeling.
clear.